evening, everyone, and welcome to Mission Possible. No, I am not Reverend Roxy Hampton, the boss RJ. I am Don Nikoloff, normally the host of Evidence Footprints. However, Reverend Roxy has asked me to fill in for her in her absence, and so we come here tonight. I'm not alone, though. I have brought the esteemed Dr. Leonard Horowitz with me tonight to co-host Mission Possible, and we want to together wish everyone a happy Easter. And with that, I'm going to turn the mic over to Dr. Len and allow him to give us an invocation to get us on the right foot tonight. Dr. Len.
We're a little bit late tonight because we had a system crash. Don Newsom's working heavily inside engineering now to resolve the matters, and we speculate it might be more government corruption, malfeasance, suppression, and censorship. But it's an interesting program we've got for you tonight. Likewise, I thank Reverend Roxy Hampton for giving up this time, this hour, for this urgency that we would like to share with you tonight. Again, Don mentioned I'm Dr. Len Horowitz. I have the Insight Hour on Tuesday nights, and I've been asked with Don to take over Reverend Roxy Hampton's program, Mission Possible, for the next several weeks while not just she recuperates, she had a very serious back injury, but also the trip that she had planned. I believe right now she is in Thailand or Cambodia. I'm not quite sure where she is, somewhere in Asia, and she's asked us anyway to fill in for her while she's away for the next 4 weeks. At any rate, we have some very, very special guests. However, before we get to that guest, I want to open it up to the Creator, praise the Creator, and ask for the Creator to bless this program, to bless engineering, to bless the equipment, to bless our hearts, open up our hearts and uplift our hearts to your divine song. May our ears hear your song, Heavenly Creator, more than anything else, that may your word, your way, your will be very, very, very super clear to us, that it enters into our hearts and creates a movement towards justice, towards the resolution and the remedies that we require for our health and safety, Heavenly Creator. We praise you for blessing this program, blessing our guests, blessing Don Nikoloff, and blessing Don Newsom for this BBS radio broadcast to you. This is Mission Possible. I'm Dr. Len Horowitz. Thank you so much, Creator. Thanks for listening, folks. Go ahead, Don. Why don't you introduce our guest?
Thank you. Well, before we do that, Dr. Len, I want to, first of all, extend on behalf of all the BBS radio hosts and of course, on behalf of us as well, included, our deepest, sincerest condolences to the Newsom family in the passing of Mom Newsom. And we want you to know that you're in our prayers, and we thank God for BBS radio and all that you've been doing for us. I have a message directly from Reverend Roxy that you would like me to read to her listening audience. And I quote, "Everybody, I am in the East rising to a great occasion which will call on us all to preserve the sacred right to be. The show tonight is a dream come true for me, for I have always believed that open dialogue and discursive thought are necessary for any truth to be revealed. These two men that you will be listening to as they deal with the serious issue of treason and right are true investigators. I am very aware of what is at stake here, and I see that you all will see, sooner or later, how close the shadow government is to fulfilling the great work. It's all going along nicely. They're excited, and they need you to not see, but tonight, you will hear two superheroes come to the rescue of our freedoms. I am very proud at this very moment, and I pray that all will listen and then stand up. And as my father said, great is this day for all who kept the faith, and dreadful for others, for that is their fate. Someone said long ago, we would have to decide exactly when to take this ride. So let us stand and declare this day that world peace is no longer on the way, because now it is here, and forever it will stay. The mission is truly possible. Enjoy the show, people. And so, with that, Dr. Horowitz, we have invited as a special guest tonight Attorney John Klar, who is representing the case of Rick Stanley. And with that, we want to welcome him and allow him to tell Rick Stanley's story, and we're going to have a very vivacious and vivid discussion about this issue. John Klar, are you with us?
Yes, sir.
Welcome.
Well, thank you, and thank you, gentlemen.
And happy Easter to you. It's a bit late now, a couple of minutes, but...
Well, on the East Coast, yeah, you just missed it. But belatedly, yes, happy Easter to all of your audience as well. And so that I don't waste time, and do interrupt me if you want me to elucidate or if I'm too long-winded, but I did prepare some comments so that I could try to be thorough and concise.
Okay, I'm going to ask you to get real close to the phone, and I'm also going to ask our engineer, Don, to turn up the audio for us so that we can hear you clearly. I don't know if Dr. Len's hearing you.
Yeah, I can hear beautifully, perfectly.
Okay, I don't know if Don can feed my audio a little bit, but if he could do that, that would be helpful. Okay, sorry to interrupt, John.
No, that's fine. I'm glad you pointed out. Is this a little better?
Yes, excellent.
Very well.
Okay, thank you.
Well, as you know, Don, and let's explain to your listeners, I'm calling on behalf of my client, a fellow named Richard Stanley, who has been very devoted to constitutional activism and trying to disseminate some truth in this country, as he's seen our freedoms deteriorate very quickly. And back in 2002, about a year after the September 11th incidents, while he was campaigning as a Libertarian candidate for the United States Senate, Rick deliberately wore a loaded sidearm in Thornton, Colorado, to protest against a city ordinance prohibiting gun possession in Thornton without a permit. And after he was arrested, understandably, Rick represented himself at trial, and he was convicted and sentenced to 90 days in prison. He then appealed this decision, also representing himself, and his appeal was denied. And right around this time, the Colorado legislature passed a bill which voided city ordinances like this one, which Rick Stanley had been convicted under. And his claim all along was that he had a constitutional right to bear arms under the Colorado and the federal constitutions, and that this ordinance was in conflict with that. After he received an order from the court to serve his jail sentence, he filed a sort of a mirror notice with what he had received from the court, which he called a notice in order. And he filed it with the trial court and with the appellate courts. And in it, he cited the Colorado statute. And then he demanded that these judges overturn his conviction, which he asserted violated his state and federal rights. And his notice stated then that if they didn't overturn his conviction, this would result in a treason charge against the judges for failure to uphold their oath of office to defend the U.S. Constitution, and that this would result in a warrant for their arrest. Rick was promptly arrested and charged with two counts of attempting to influence a public official by threat, and after he was convicted, was sentenced to two consecutive maximum three-year prison terms. All right, so that's the factual situation of where we stood up until last year. He's now gone all the way to the Colorado Supreme Court, and his case has not been overturned. So now he's appealing to the United States Supreme Court by something called a writ of certiorari. He was an honorably discharged veteran. If people aren't familiar with Rick's case, he has no criminal history before this, a successful businessman in Denver. He never threatened any physical harm to these judges. He didn't even threaten to arrest them, but only that he would issue this symbolic warrant. So when a citizen rebels against his government, it's called treason. But if the judges had, in fact, violated Rick Stanley's constitutional rights, wouldn't they be committing treason? I mean, that's the way Rick felt, and that's what he was trying to protest. So why is Rick Stanley in jail on two felonies, facing the permanent loss of his rights to vote and bear arms, for exercising his clear constitutional freedom to speak out politically and to confront these judges? From beginning to end, whatever one feels about the gun case, about the issue of the Second Amendment, which is now before the U.S. Supreme Court, from beginning to end, Rick Stanley's story has been about an outspoken citizen who's challenging an establishment that has gone to great lengths to shut him up. And that's what Rick's case is about. In the Colorado court, appellate court decision, when they affirmed his conviction, the judges went so far as to conclude that to threaten arrest, which Rick had not actually done, he threatened to issue a warrant for arrest, but they concluded they had threatened arrest, was an implicit threat of violence, which would be news to us about our police officers, I guess, and that a charge of treason was essentially tantamount to a threat to kill these judges, because treason, according to the Colorado Court of Appeals, is punishable by death, though no one has been executed in this country that I can find for treason since 1952. But this is how much they hyped up Rick's supposed threats. And they also concluded that it didn't matter whether or not Rick Stanley intended to threaten the judges, but only whether the judges felt threatened. And this is clearly in conflict with a lot of law, but we can see how somebody could end up in prison, like Rick, when they had no intention other than trying to publicize the situation. So this provided immense power to these judges and to the state of Colorado to curtail pure political speech by criminalizing mere words based solely on the perception of the recipients, who were public officials being criticized for the performance of their duties. So this unconstitutional determination by the Colorado Court of Appeals may contain Rick Stanley's best hope, because there's division between the federal circuit courts over whether a subjective intent to threaten is required, that is, that Rick intended to threaten, in order to criminalize speech. And the Court of Appeals decision is squarely at odds with prior rulings of the U.S. Supreme Court. So it is for exactly the resolution of these type of conflicts that the Supreme Court does grant writs of certiorari. But the court gets about 5,000 writs a year, and they only grant about 50. So the odds are very much stacked against anybody getting before the U.S. Supreme Court.
That's 0.1%, you're saying. Now,
yes.
It's my understanding, and I want to invite Dr. Len into this conversation as well, that after he was convicted, that the Colorado State Legislature voided such laws as the one that put him in jail. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. As I hope I mentioned at the beginning, that that's one of the reasons that prompted him to take this action, because he felt vindicated by the Colorado Legislature. And the other thing that must be borne in mind as a backdrop is that this entire thing began when Rick was protesting his rights. The federal government, under the guise of the Domestic Anti-Terrorism Task Force, was taking video surveillance of Rick and his supporters, American citizens, running for U.S. Senate at the time. Rick was campaigning, and they were being under surveillance, not just video surveillance, but his emails, his phones, and everything, for nothing other that I can see but protesting his Second Amendment right to bear arms. So we see within just over a year of September 11th, the government using its sweeping powers against U.S. citizens who are simply trying to exercise their First and Second Amendment rights. So that's really what Rick's case is about. It's not just about a gun case at all. In fact, the case before the U.S. Supreme Court this Friday is solely about the free speech issue. Generally speaking, we have a right to free speech about political, religious, or artistic expression. Pure words are generally fully protected, unless the government carves out an area where it can curtail our speech. True threats, where I threaten you with violence or try to intimidate or coerce you, are not free or protected speech, and no one would think so. But what the court's done here, the Colorado court, is construed something as a true threat, which was not, which was pure political speech in a context of pure political speech. So all Americans should hope that the U.S. Supreme Court will decide to grant Rick's writ next week, because threatening to issue a warrant for George Bush's arrest if he doesn't pull out of Iraq should not result in felony prison time and a revocation of your rights to vote and own a gun. So it's not just about gun advocates. And it is precisely and solely such language directed at two judges in a pro se legal proceeding which got Rick Stanley in jail. He's in for 6 years now. And again, all of this because of beginning to end, because he was trying to protest pure political speech. So the Supreme Court, in the case of District of Columbia versus Heller, will probably decide that we do have an individual right to bear arms, but I believe that they will say the government has a right to curtail that right. And if the court declines to hear Rick Stanley's writ on March 28th, it will implicitly approve Colorado's actions in criminalizing pure speech by a political activist who is standing up for our right to bear arms. So not only are we seeing the Second Amendment threatened, but the First Amendment in one fell swoop. So on top of illegal wiretapping and the loss of the protections of habeas corpus and posse comitatus and other constitutional protections, are we now to lose the First and Second Amendment rights as well? It's happening so quickly. Jose Padilla is a household name, but he didn't wish Americans well and certainly didn't care about protecting our constitutional freedoms. Ed Brown, the tax protester in New Hampshire that we went and interviewed, got national attention. But Rick was standing up against the IRS, not for the First and Second Amendment, and not to denigrate Rick, Ed in any way. But long before, you know, Rick allegedly threatened these judges, the federal government was out to get him. And now look how far it's come. And the best they could do in all their surveillance was these notices that he filed. So Rick Stanley's case is really about government abuse of our rights.
Yes.
It's about hostility both toward the First and Second Amendments by a government created to serve but corrupted over the decades to oppress us. So why was the federal government devoting supposed anti-terrorism resources to investigate and spy on an American citizen who was just legitimately running for office and seeking to defend our First and Second Amendment protections?
Yes, and there's another case that occurred in Ohio, in fact, regarding former attorney Elizabeth Baumgartner. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but she pointed out that a local city prosecutor in a rather small town in north central Ohio was fixing a contract with a ferry company that was going to be commuting from the Great Lakes Islands in Ohio, Put-in Bay and Kelly's Island, and running a ferry service to the Port Clinton area. And he had a financial interest in the company that was being awarded the contract, as well as she pointed out the fact that this company was transporting drugs. And it was one of the first cases exemplifying how we lost habeas corpus. They just threw her in jail and charged her with crimes and threatening the judges. The same thing that's going on here with Rick Stanley's case, with Ed and Elaine Brown. And she was not given due process. She wasn't allowed to present a defense. They just threw her in jail. We've got to stop these things. Dr. Len, do you have any feelings about this?
Well, lots, but I'm not an expert in this particular area of constitutional law, but it brings up some obvious questions to me for Attorney John. What about the NRA? Do they have a position on this? Have they been notified? Is there some support coming from the National Rifle Association?
Well, there are press releases going out to a lot of various groups, and Liberty Council and some other groups have agreed to try to help publicize Rick's case, but this started in 2002. There has been coverage in the national media, but as with many individuals, over time, they fade from the public's consciousness and recollection. So that's why we're trying to publicize Rick's case once again, to call upon our U.S. Supreme Court to hear these important issues at the same time as deciding our Second Amendment rights. So I hope that's responsive to the question.
Well, partly. I mean, it doesn't allay my concerns. Let me ask you one thing, if you don't mind. It's a kind of like a personal question. I find that you're extremely articulate, and you seem to have a tremendous grasp on the bigger picture here. But that brings up some questions for me. The first question is, are you taking this case on pro bono?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I guess I really wouldn't discuss my fee arrangements with my clients.
I'm sure he's not paying you to do a radio show for him, right?
Oh, no, I'm not being paid any for any of the promotional work I'm doing at all. And really, we're just helping each other by and large. And I don't want to talk about any fee arrangements, but... I have been out of practice for a number of years due to health issues, and I've got people that want to hire me right now, but I don't work for them. But I took this case because of the issues that are involved and because I'm a friend of Rick's.
Okay, so that takes me to the next set of questions. Are you licensed to practice law in the state of Colorado?
No, sir.
So how is it that you're able to do anything in the local arena?
Because... Rick had Colorado counsel through the the Colorado Supreme Court, at which time his counsel withdrew and felt that it was over their head to go to the U.S. Supreme Court. They were not criminal counsel, I guess, by practice.
So you're just basically acting as a consultant, so pro se case, correct?
Well, I'm admitted before the U.S. Supreme Court, and I will be representing him solely before the U.S. Supreme Court and not in any state jurisdiction. So
oh, wonderful. Okay. So that brings up my next set of questions, and it has relevance to what you shared, obviously. The words that you articulated, there were two things that have been brought up thus far. Words, the importance of words in the legal system and the manipulation of the words in the context of legality or illegality of the manipulation definition of words to incarcerate somebody and to control the population, number one. Number two is, it brings up that particular thing, brings up an example of what you mentioned, drugs, that there's a previous case that has to do with drugs. I think Don mentioned that.
Yes.
And that the relevance that it brings up in my mind is the fact that the Food and Drug Administration, under the federal regulations currently, can actually eliminate your capacity to bring a product to market in a open, free speech way if you simply say the words cure, prevent, treat any kind of illness. They immediately have in their minds that that represents a violation of the monopolization that they've created, and that it's a drug. So the example that I gave to the FDA about 2 years ago, with regard to, actually it was more than that now, time flies, about the SARS issue, when I received a notice from the FDA saying that, you know, you're advertising a respiratory elixir for SARS, allegedly that it cures SARS, and that we need to have you stop, cease and desist. And I wrote them back saying, excuse me, I said the sun cures jaundice, infantile jaundice. When babies are born with liver dysfunction and their skin is all full of the liver intoxicating and hemoglobin type of discoloration, what we have now is a illness that electromagnetic frequencies solves. I said, does that cause the sun? If we say the sun cures jaundice, does that make the sun a drug? And they refused, obviously, to answer, but, of course, the threat of incarceration and all of this business essentially drove me to take my next step with them. Now, the issue that we're dealing with engages a system that is corrupt as sin, to say the least. The legal system itself, as you probably know, when you enter into the courts, and you see a gold fringe around the flag in the courtroom, you're not dealing with a real civil justice system. You're dealing with maritime, the Navy, the old intelligence, the manipulation of the waterways has now created through this whole evolution of this criminal and justice system, this totally corrupt system that words and language are constantly manipulated. The system is engaged continuously in doing that, just like the example I shared. And that, how is it that through a system as corrupt as sin, we would hope to be able to free the political prisoner that you're talking about tonight? I mean, it's kind of like, you know, you go into the den of iniquity to find out whether you can eliminate the iniquity. And it, to me, it's kind of like, man, I'll tell you something. I don't know. I've been dealing with this corrupt system insanely. It is beyond any reasonable, rational explanation. So how do you bring truth and justice to a system that despises that?
In 10 words or less?
Yeah.
All right. Well, this is actually something I've struggled with, Doctor, for a long time, and it's a good philosophical starting point, because something I've learned is that if you idealistically perceive that you will change a corrupt system by becoming part of it, you will be devoured by that system. And that's why many say that I should return to the practice of law. And I'm not putting down all lawyers. We need some good lawyers. I'd also defend our legal system overall, but what I would say is that we live in a sin-cursed world with sin-cursed humans running sin-cursed governments, and I don't anticipate that I'll see perfection in government. But it is certainly a question whether we have some residue of truth and of structures of justice and social justice left in this nation. And cases like this, I think, are the real test. The question, to put it back to you kind of philosophically also, is if Rick Stanley were correct in his perspective that his constitutional rights, clearly enunciated by our founding fathers and considered natural laws by many, were being compromised deliberately and knowingly by judges who had taken an oath to uphold those constitutional rights, would they not, in fact, be committing treason? And where would he then turn other than to call publicly for their ouster or their accountability, which was what he was intending to do? Now, if on Friday of next week the U.S. Supreme Court refuses to hear Rick Stanley's writ, they are implicitly affirming the lower court's decision. He will spend 6 years in jail or some part thereof, and he will lose for life under this government his rights to vote, etc. And he will have no higher court to go to, unless we were to go to the International Court of Human Justice or something like that, which is, I don't think, anticipated. Would it then be appropriate for us, when our laws, if our laws are perceived to have been ignored by the U.S. Supreme Court, that there is no separation of powers anymore, that it's not just the executive and legislative branches, but the judicial as well that has run away? At some point, do we, the people, take the reins into our own hands? Do we say, as a lawyer admitted to the bar of the Supreme Court, do we say that a warrant should arrest or should issue for their arrest? That's the question you're asking. At what point is the system so broken that we can't expect justice from it anymore? I'd like to think that the court will hear the case, because Rick's case is so compelling and it is so obvious, and it would be an affirmation of at least some effort that the system is trying to climb towards the light, however much it may be floundering. And I would say this too, this was more than 10 words, obviously, but we're in some dire times in our nation, and it's a consequence of an abandonment of the values, I think, that once held us together more in community, and substituting them for a materialism and a consumerism that we could look back to the Greeks and their philosophers to tell us is a failed system. And we can't all be medicated in this industrial treadmill that we're walking on and pursue the American dream anymore. It is coming apart, and it's coming apart because of debt and values and pollution and just an abandonment of the human compassion and decency that really is what hopefully we'll be left with when all this craziness comes down.
You know, I pray that that's the case, and you sound like an extremely intelligent man and someone who is spiritually endowed, having given good due diligence to deciphering, you know, and looking at the nitty-gritty of these issues. However, when you say, quote, we can't all be medicated, I have to tell you, that's precisely what they're doing with the vaccinations.
Well, I know, and it's something why I've... If I would take a little aside, which is something I mentioned I do with many of these situations, let me just recite a few facts that would not be controversial for most any American listening. Because some will question whether chemtrails or microchips or these, you know, or voter fraud are real. But let's talk about a couple of things that are really out there in the living room, big elephants. And that is that corporate America and the federal government have become so commingled that our labor is being consumed from within. This is not conspiracy theory. Look at how audacious and greedy they have become, stealing and polluting us right in front of our faces with impunity. Our borders are porous because corporate America tells us we need a cheap labor pool, yet there are these huge costs associated with this labor pool that are passed on to our public services and borne by taxpayers, which essentially subsidizes corporations. And it's not that I don't have empathy for immigration, but we have to have some integrity to our borders, or we're not a nation anymore. Every nation has limits on immigration and regulates it.
I think you should run for Senate.
No, I don't want to be corrupted by the system.
You already are. You're an attorney.
The media has consistently traded journalistic integrity for profit and access to the government. Look at how the Bush administration has done that, and has parroted government propaganda that dishonestly thrust our servicemen and women into war, and which dramatically expanded federal power overnight. The mainstream media have routinely assisted government in their deceit. NBNA America, the credit card company, was George W. Bush's top campaign contributor, and they drafted the legislation which restricted the ability of American consumers to discharge their credit card debt in bankruptcy. Halliburton and other military industrial hogs have been feasting long and heavy at this lavish trough of government spending on war under this administration. We've got heavily subsidized biodiesel from corn, which is displacing our food supplies, even though it doesn't even work economically, and we're subsidizing it heavily with taxpayer dollars to grease the palms of Midwest politicians and big business. Oil companies are raping our currency, and we got an oil man in the White House and a Halliburton exec as VP. And look at this recent one, people. We're looking at the excesses, the consequences of the excesses in the home market. And as this all comes down to roost, the Bush rejects relief for homeowners. Our Congress spends several weeks deciding whether or not to give us $200 billion in quote-unquote economic stimulus of our own money that anybody on the street can see through. But when Bear Stearns and Wall Street are in trouble, the feds waltz right in and drop them $230 billion overnight. And Bush hails this as a great thing. The President of the United States has expended incredible political energy to seek to include retroactive immunity for telecommunications companies in an economic stimulus package for the American people while Rome is burning. Why is it so important for him to get retroactive immunity to those telecommunications companies when we know that the only way they would ever be held liable to pay a penny would be by proof in a court of law that they had violated the law? They must have something to hide. Over and over, the media, the wireless companies, we see them all jumping in bed with government, government jumping in bed with them. And we've got the two most powerful men in our nation are a long-term Halliburton exec and a Silver Spoon oil family spoiled brat. So has anybody noticed here that we are being robbed blind and led into servitude by the government that was supposedly created to serve us?
John, I would like to add and expand on what you just said, and it relates back to Rick's case. When you told me of the specifics of his case, I reminded you, or I pointed out to you, that it mirrors what I know is going on in courtrooms across the country. This is involving the Child Protective Services, domestic relations, bankruptcy court, probate court, and even traffic court, in that there is an element of organized crime that is involved in and outside the courtroom, controlling the judges, controlling the attorneys, controlling the psychologists, controlling the social workers, everyone who works for the court. Now, there may be some good people in there, but by and large, they're all involved in a money laundering scheme. Particularly, I referenced Cook County, Illinois, where they ship the money and stolen identities of the kids that are taken out of the custody of the good parents in custody cases, in divorce cases where the other spouse is not meeting the obligations of the divorce decree, which might be alimony or some sort of child support in the form of insurance payments or schooling or something along those lines. And they're attacking the legal guardian, going after all the assets, taking the assets to Maricopa County, Arizona, and into the recorder's office. Using Promise software, they are creating false identities, laundering the money, bouncing it to Provo, Utah, and then back again to Maricopa County, laundered, buying tax-free real estate all throughout the country, not just there in Arizona, and it's being orchestrated with the direction and the control of the organized crime families. It involves small business loans. I know this specifically in the state of Illinois. I've looked up the records, and I find tremendous inconsistencies and very questionable loans to companies that don't even exist. So we know that the politicians are padding their pockets, they're paying off judges and attorneys and organized crime syndicates, and to the detriment of the public. What you're seeing is legalized criminal impoverishment being forced upon the people. This is happening in every aspect of our society. It's not just the corporations. The courts are doing it. Now, where does the money go? They put it into pure trust, with the judges and the attorneys being the participants and the beneficiaries of those accounts. Where? Check the Fidelity accounts in New York City. We have problems in the derivative and hedge fund accounts because they're embezzling trillions of dollars of money that's targeted to go into the Treasury, and they're also hypothecating and duplicating these embezzled funds as if they actually have them in their possession, and they're creating more of the Federal Reserve dollars in these hypothecated derivatives and hedge funds. So you want to see why the banks are collapsing? It's because of what the court system is doing, and they're creating the law as they go along. I mean, this is treasonous. This is criminal. Absolutely criminal.
Well, and I can't speak to the specific case you're talking about, obviously, but it sounds like you have ample info to expose it. But I do think it's criminal, and I think I'm a Ron Paul supporter, if only because he's a disseminator of a lot of truth, and he is a constitutionalist. And the way he's been fringed by the mainstream media from day one, it reminds me of Alberto Gonzalez calling the Geneva Convention quaint. They have actively, in the mainstream media and many government people, but also a lot of pundits out there like George F. Will and others, who have actively minimized and even ridiculed the constitutional positions of Ron Paul. It is as if they are denigrating our heritage as well as that man. And so when you talk about an increase in power, we've had the things I've just recited. There are others that are less perhaps obvious or more controversial. The drug war that allows them to seize my house, well, not mine, but seize a person's house, where they don't seize the real estate of a pedophile or a bank robber, but if you grow some pot plants, or if you got a couple of, you know, OxyContin, they can steal your house. Huge asset seizures. But more importantly, a huge industry built about around a police state that it can increase its payrolls, increase the number of officers, increase all their toys, increase their helicopters. As far as I know, I believe there are helicopters flying around in all 50 states of this country purportedly looking for pot plants. But from the lawyers I've talked to, there hasn't been a single successful challenge to the constitutionality of those helicopters in this country, because the federal government actively defends and prevents any such case ever getting before a judge. Because if it was struck down once, then they couldn't justify continuing to do it. Is it a violation of our constitutional rights against unwarranted searches and seizures? Absolutely. A fourth grader could tell you so. And our founding fathers are rolling over in their graves, but they're doing it every day. And the people of America are not rising up to do anything about it. It's hard to blame our courts when we're ignorant. I'm reminded of Orwell, and the proles are always too busy trying to make ends meet and put a little food on their table to be aware of what the party is doing. And the other thing I'd point out is that there's been a dramatic expansion in the last 10 years, especially post 9/11, of an integration of federal and state police authorities. Not just the elimination of posse comitatus, and if you look in the John Warner National Defense Authorization Act and the USA Patriot Act, you will find in the government's website, www.senate.gov, go in those acts, and you will see that the government can now use our military forces against civilian populations and our National Guard against civilian populations. What they've also done is the federal system created by the Founding Fathers was to separate the state powers from the federal. And anything not given to the federal government was reserved to the states. The idea being that you wouldn't have this huge government enslaving us all with their microchip passports or whatever they're planning for us. What they did after 9/11 is try to integrate local law enforcement with federal law enforcement. I understand there was a program particularly called FALCON. I believe it stands for Federal and Local Cops Organized Nationally, something like that. And under this program, they rounded up tens of thousands of Americans, purportedly in an anti-terrorism sting. Maybe less than 0.1% had anything remotely to do with terrorism. This is a dramatic power grab and expansion of federal power at the expense of local rights. No Child Left Behind, nice name, underfunded. Why does No Child Left Behind, while saying it helps local schools, take a dramatic, expansive power grab and registration for federal government? Why does it mandate the allowance of military recruitment personnel in high schools and the registration of high school students for selective service. They are blatantly, as I said, right in our face, robbing the poor to give to the rich.
Oh, yeah.
Supply-side economics is a ripoff. Compassionate conservatism is an excuse to shut down social welfare programs for the poor. It's all Orwellian farce. Slavery is freedom. War is peace. Get your gun.
Well, you know, what comes to mind here, and, you know, I want to give Dr. Len another chance to respond to what you said, too. What comes to mind, Rick is from the Denver area, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And he is doing, he's serving 6 years for a gun charge, which he's protesting under his Second Amendment rights, and then his First Amendment rights to address the judge's handling of that case. Basically, got him in hot water over his First Amendment rights, freedom of speech. What happened to Neil Bush? Wasn't it $150 billion defrauded from the Silverado savings? What happened to that? How many years did he get for that?
I don't recall, but he was convicted. And I think he got less than 18 months, didn't he? I'm just dusting off my cobwebs here.
So evidently this right then is definitely, Rick's case is going to either set legal precedents or they're going to use this as a benchmark to strike down other challenges.
Well, not everyone's sympathetic to a situation like Rick's because they might say that he was a rabble-rouser or got what he sought. But, you know, judges are specifically told, according to our U.S. Supreme Court, that they have to be a little thick-skinned for criticism and expect it. What I think is perhaps telling about Rick Stanley's case is not only that he was being under federal government surveillance for exercising his rights, that somebody should be held accountable up there for that instead of Rick, but I cannot find a single case in American history in any state in which a man was incarcerated for any amount of time for threatening to issue a warrant for arrest. Solely. There's no threat to physically harm anyone. It was clear political hyperbole. In the famous case of U.S. versus Watts in 1969, the U.S. Supreme Court addressed the case of a fellow who was a draft evader or draft protester, and he said that if they drafted him and gave him a gun, the first thing he'd do if he got a gun was put his sights on LBJ. He went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. He was only convicted, by the way, or only sentenced to probation, not a day in jail. Went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the court threw it out. Said it was clear political hyperbole when you looked at the context. And in this case with Rick Stanley, the court bent over backwards to exclude context. We have a man in jail for 6 years with no criminal record beforehand, an honorably discharged veteran who was merely trying to educate the public, just as you folks are, about their rights and to educate them about what was going on and to stand up to a government that he felt was violating their rights. And now he's in jail for 6 years? Unheard of. In America the Great. My theory is that maybe they're trying to erase all of our freedoms so that the terrorists won't hate us anymore. Or perhaps make it so miserable here for us that the Mexicans won't come over the border anymore. I am being facetious, obviously.
Yes.
But we are seeing reality, and most Americans will say that they have this anxiety. They feel it's happening, but they feel powerless. It's time for them to take their country back. And the first way to do that is through information. And the power of the pen is mightier than the power of the sword, obviously. But Dr. Len, please comment. Join us.
Well, I think that really you're such a great orator and you have such a grasp of the big picture and the little litigation issues that are just like David and Goliath's story here. The question I have before we pretty much do anything else and wrap it up for the night is, what do you think people should do right now to help Rick? Because that's really the purpose. I mean, should we be writing Pen Mightier Than the Sword? Should they be writing to the newspapers in Colorado? Should they be writing to their congresspeople? I mean, I don't know if that does any good, do you?
Well, thank you for asking, and so I'll remember to mention Rick Stanley's website so that they can learn more about his case. His briefs are there, the writ is there, the law is there. Rick knows more about the Constitution than I ever want to know. His website is www.stanley, S-T-A-N-L-E-Y, 2002.org. I don't think people, in answer to your question, Doctor, I don't think people should directly contact the court under any circumstances. that would potentially annoy them.
No, I wasn't. That wasn't the court I mentioned. It was the newspapers in Colorado.
Yeah, and I'm just saying, just specifically making sure that people don't contact the court. But newspapers in Colorado, national newspapers, D.C. newspapers, Congress people, the Internet, it is information that is the only hope for Americans to counter the misinformation and deliberate misinformation. Information is key. And that's what Orwell was trying to warn us about. He wasn't just warning us about the Soviets. Any ideology, including neoconservatism and the American mythology, can be used to manipulate people into slavery. So the more that we have an antidote to that, the Internet is that. The Internet and the alternative media. People can spread out millions of messages in a day or two. And it has a tremendous power, and it's something they didn't plan on. They're planning on subjugating us, but they didn't plan on the power of the net. They're trying to gain control of it. They have people actively watching it. But it still is a tremendous power for transmitting information. Please, people, anybody, whatever you think you can do, if it's just to your friends, spread information about Rick or his website, or you know, contact me. I can send out some press releases and information. My email address is RevPress, R-E-V-P-R-E-S-S. That's Revelation Press. Or short is RevPress, at KingCon, KingCon.com. Sorry, I don't have an easier one to remember.
John, I wanted to ask you, and I thank Dr. Len for saving me the trouble of asking the question that he asked. What is the position of the Colorado legislature? They have to know that this case is transpiring as it has, despite the law that they passed, voiding the local laws prohibiting what he has been incarcerated for.
I really don't know. I've wondered whether it was some of Rick's activism that prompted the Colorado legislature to pass the bill that they did. But I don't know the history of it, because although I've watched Rick's case over the last couple of years, I wasn't his counsel, and I didn't jump into it until about 2 months ago, and I came in kind of late. So I really couldn't, with any authority, comment on the history there or what they're doing. But at this juncture, it would be quite extraordinary for a state legislature to commute a sentence. It would be more the executive branch, like a governor, that would do so. And I'm not aware of any efforts that have been made on Rick's behalf in Colorado, but I'm sure that he and I would be receptive to any such avenues.
It's sort of like you get busted for selling pot today, and tomorrow they pass a law legalizing it.
Right. And if they don't pass it retroactively,
mm-hmm.
which would be void ab initio from the beginning, then that would only be effective going forward. I could tell you that I think from Rick's perspective is that he's not as interested in being freed from prison as he is from having some accountability from the system, to having some affirmation of rights. For him, if he would much rather go to the U.S. Supreme Court and have his day than just walk away right now. But again, the odds are against him. However righteous his cause and however clear it is that his rights have been violated, there might very well be 100 Rick Stanleys sitting in line right now waiting to be heard by the U.S. Supreme Court.
Well, I find it ironic that he ran for public office and then this happened to him afterward. It's sort of payback, I guess, for running. This system just reeks of underhandedness.
Well, outsiders are not welcome. And what Americans need to recognize is that the two-party system is really a one-party system now, co-opted by corporations. As I mentioned earlier before, corporations and the government are now completely commingled. They're hand in glove one way or the other. And that is the definition of fascism. So I'm afraid we don't live in the American Dream Republic anymore. We live in an illusion thereof, just as our fiat currency is an illusion, by the way. So don't worry too much about those people running off with all that money, because it's worth less every day. I don't know if that's heartening.
Despite what we're told, too.
What's that?
Despite what we're told through the media.
Yeah, well, you know, if you study the Great Depression, you'll see that that's exactly what happened. And, you know, the song, Happy Days Are Here Again, that was written in 1931, like 1 or 2 years into the Great Depression. The government was always telling us that relief was right around the corner, and I already read in the papers now. The reality is that this is my analytical perspective. The reality is that you cannot put 10,000 pounds in a rowboat. And our debt load is what's pulling down. The oil is not going up. Gold is not going up. The dollar is going down precipitously. And the rest of the world is getting ready to bail on us because they can see what's shaping up. We've been the world's consumers of last resort for decades. Now we're petered out like a junkie that robbed of all the money he could get for his last fix. And now they're going to leave us to detox on our own. And our oil dependency will now be shown to be the biggest travesty and farce in the history of humankind, because we are totally dependent on oil for our heat and our food. The entire East Coast gets most of its food from the West Coast, 4,000 to 3,500 miles away. 90% of America's produce that's produced domestically is produced in California and Arizona. And here I am in Vermont, and all our farmland's all gone over to single-family residences, Vermont, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Rhode Island.
Yeah, they're exporting all our agricultural products, and they're importing products from other countries.
We import probably 40% of our produce from South America, I believe, or from abroad, and a lot of that from South America.
Yes.
But of the produce that we do still make in this country, the bulk of it comes from the West Coast. This
yes.
is totally against nature. But I do digress here, and I apologize for that, but I think it is part and parcel of a larger picture, which is that the corporations and the Americans are embedded. We have two parties that are both being paid usually very similar amounts by Exxon. They're both being paid by Halliburton. Isn't it extraordinary that the Republican Party would go so far to cast Ron Paul out of their ranks? They would rather lose to Hillary Clinton than win the election with Ron Paul. That's very telling.
That
everyone thinks of a Ron Paul or a Ross Perot, they were efforts to infuse an actual debate in this country about the real problems that confront us, rather than keep us busy with this watch the birdie distraction stuff about who's going to give us the best health care plan that we can't possibly afford because we're already bankrupt.
Yes.
The whole thing's a dog and pony show.
The Clintons are in the midst. Remember, the Clintons held 8 years in office in between two Bush regimes. And Hillary is mired in this corruption very, very deeply, as well as the others. And she knows.
Well, as Dr. Len was saying, they would not permit a person to take the helm of that corrupt state or system unless they were co-opted and controllable in that position.
Yes.
And that's why Ron Paul, he's not a player. But that's why Obama, you know, however much faith people put in Obama, he's got to be a player or they wouldn't let him play.
Yes.
Well, and that's what we need to change. That's what we need to shake up. I'll take Ralph Nader. I'll take my plumber. I'll take anybody with integrity and put him in that office, because I'm tired of being filled with these all things to all people, talking head, big brother characters. But anyway, sorry, I'm getting late at night here on the East Coast. I apologize.
No, that's okay. We understand your anger, and we share it.
Well, it's
disheartening.
I have children, you know, and I believe in my country, and I believe in my Constitution, and I'm a lawyer, and I trained in it. And I've seen it from the inside, and I'm seeing it deteriorate before our eyes. Maybe the question is not whether it's salvageable, but what are we going to do? Because we have to try.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we're on the air right now. Because I can have $10 million. I can have $10 billion. But I have no future with it if I don't have the foundations of liberty and all of these things that are much more than just trite words that we learned in sixth grade. They're real, and we're seeing them evaporate so rapidly. And frankly, I think it has something to do with shows like this one and the Internet, which are compelling them to accelerate their plans because they didn't plan on it. And they have to move faster because people are using these tools to counter their misinformation campaign.
Yes.
Conspiracy theory, but it isn't.
Yes. On the other hand, and I want to, again, invite Dr. Len back in here after I make this statement. On the other hand, we're witnessing also at the same time somewhat of a collapse of their system at the same time, because people are waking up. They're understanding the spiritual implications of this, and people are going to start reclaiming their sovereignty, their individual and collective sovereignty.
Amen.
And it's in that we are going to succeed in this. Dr. Len, any comments?
Yeah, well, you know, it leaves me feeling very uncomfortable with the position that I have been taking, because it seems to me I constantly come back to the conclusion that you don't want to put any energy into a completely dysfunctional, totally corrupt and satanic system. And yet, when I say that, that implies also don't go to vote, because by pulling the vote scam, be participating in it, you're actually adding energy to it. By, I've been saying, you know, I can't wait till they give a war that nobody shows up to fight. You know, this parade of of hypocrisy and lunacy and malicious malfeasance and abuse of the human rights. All of this parade is marching on. The emperor's got no clothes. Everybody's screaming that the emperor's got no clothes, and yet the parade keeps marching, the media keeps promoting it. So the issue that I'm always left with is, it ain't going to happen by man's laws that we have resolution. It's going to happen by the Creator's laws, and the more that we can ourselves connect to that channel of powerful divine blessing for justice divine, that's where our remedy is. That's where our resolution and restoration resides, is in that domain. Now, that requires a spiritual renaissance. It doesn't require a political movement. There's not going to be a political movement that's going to help this situation, in my humble opinion, because the whole global politics, the geopolitics of globalization, is a manipulation of the population for decimation. So where do we turn? You know, yeah, I've written all these, you know, books, and I've written the articles, and I've written the congressman, and I've written, you know, it hasn't helped to my knowledge to, you know, and so there's a part of me that's kind of like, well, maybe I saved some babies out there from the vaccine issue. Maybe we've really helped to wake people up. But quite honestly, fellas, this kind of a show makes me feel really sad, because I don't feel like I have done enough. And I'm sure you feel the same.
Absolutely. This is why I so readily opened my heart to Rick and Pam Stanley and John Klar for the stand that they're taking. And I agree with you also, Dr. Len, that and John, this is a spiritual battle, and we have to awaken as a country, as a nation. We have to awaken to the reality that we have a Creator who gave us the gift of life, and we have to show some appreciation for it, and that will be our salvation.
Amen. Well, and if I could chime in on a similar spiritual note, and it is one of the reasons I took Rick's case, because I felt that a higher power wanted me to, and he felt the higher power stuck him in my lap. But I wrote a book about a year ago that I didn't have published because I felt that Americans didn't want to hear it. It was called Living the American Doom. Very cheerful tome. But what it says is, I'm not a doom and gloomer. I'm just looking at reality. You can't put 10,000 pounds in a rowboat, as they say now. And then if I saw somebody driving off the edge of a cliff, I'd like to warn them. What it says is that you can mathematically demonstrate that this economy will collapse and that this system will fail and that overpopulation will be a problem and that we cannot sustainably feed ourselves as a planet anymore. You can prove this. The only question at the end is, what do we really value? And are you really an atheist evolutionist who thinks that you're here for nothing? In the history, biblically, without getting denominational, but biblically, in the Old Testament, Israel would turn away from God, their false idols and their sacrifices, and then bad things would happen. And then they'd turn back to God, and then they get a little complacent. I don't think there's anything terrible about Americans. I think we're just more of a human history. We're the Roman Empire and the British Empire and the Israel of old. We've turned away from the values of holiness, of decency. We see ourselves rife now as the purveyors around the world of military hardware, of pornography, of pedophilia, of all sorts of things that we shouldn't be so proud of as we call ourselves a Christian nation. So I think that it's time for Americans to take their attention off the little toys and the he who dies with the most illusions wins, and start to realize what really counts, which is their neighbors and their children and all the others that they've been ignoring while they've been, in many ways, misled, deceived by Satan. Yes, to get on that treadmill, that worldly treadmill. And nothing will get their attention back. Nothing will bring more spiritual life into the worldly deadness of this nation than its very implosion. So I guess we of some spiritual insight should, however, with however much trepidation, invite this and welcome it, and it be an opportunity to say to other people, so what are you panicking about? So your cell phone doesn't work. Say thank you. You know. So I think there's a value system shift going on here. So, Dr. Len, I really agree with you, because I have been of the opinion, have been outspoken in saying, I don't intend to vote this fall. I may, but I will not vote for the two parties anymore, and I haven't in a decade or two. I will not participate, because you're right, because Americans perceive that the only choice they have is one of the two choices they're given. And if you have an election where Saddam Hussein is the only candidate, we say that's not really an election. And we have candidates where whoever you vote for, you're still voting for corporate America. It's not a true choice. Do not participate. Third candidate, protest or bust, something. And I share your cynicism. I don't think the system is going to respond, but I still try. I never thought Ron Paul had a prayer. I still support him. I still like to disseminate some of his messages. So thank you for allowing me another long-winded response. But I join you, gentlemen, in our spiritual hope, in our corporal failure.
Yeah, and I think just adding the fact that we do need to join hands as brothers and sisters and speak up. Our silence is killing us. We really need to come together with a one unified voice and decree that this injustice shall not stand, certainly not in the justice system divine. And so bringing heaven to earth, which is where we're all desiring, let's have it here right now. And the way that we can best accomplish that is by, like programs like this, raising our voices in unified contempt for this injustice and for the enslavement of our people, the intoxication of our children. And, you know, I just pray again, and we'll end tonight with a little prayer. Heavenly Creator, thank you for the blessings of the revelation and the education, the edification of the congregation listening tonight. May you please bless with the protective angels Rick, who needs it big time to combat this legal beast, this system of injustice that he is up against. Thank you for the attorney. Thank you for this interview. And thank you for the blessings that you bestow on behalf of not just you, but your people who have ears to hear and eyes to see. In Yahshua's name, I praise you. Amen.
Amen. And thank you, Dr. Horowitz. And I suggest that everyone pray for Rick and Pamela Stanley. Also for John Clark, and let's hang in there. Now, John, you're going to be on my Evident Footprint show this week, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Actually, twice on Wednesday, you will be on the TNT News Hour as well. And all of my guests, I haven't asked Dr. Horowitz if we can invite him for part of the show on Tuesday, just to get the word out.
I'm trying to help you. I think that would be fine. I can. Join you right after the Insight Hour that starts 9 o'clock Pacific time.
Yes, I have you booked for the whole show. I wanted to give John another opportunity because there are people that are just tuning in for the first time every day of the week. So we're getting the word out. We're going to be doing some mass mailings around the country, and actually I've gotten some things out already. So we're going to make this become part of the public consciousness, so that we can have people praying and assert our sovereign authority that God has given us with our birthright.
Amen.
So I look forward to that interview. It'll be a short time at the beginning of the program on Tuesday with your blessings.
Sure.
Okay. John Clark, thank you so much for the stand you're taking for Rick Stanley. And
thank you for doing that for humanity.
Yes, you're doing this for the whole country, and that's the reason why we are bringing this out. If it was just for Rick, I would do that anyway. I think you know that by now. But it really has an impact on the rest of the nation. And we will. It gives us an opportunity to center ourselves in our hearts and turn to God. And allow God to manifest a solution. I really know that that can happen, and that's what we will pray. And I will see you tomorrow on Evident Footprints, and again, Tuesday and Wednesday. Dr. Len, I will see you on Tuesday, and we want to extend again a happy Easter to Reverend Roxy Hampton for inviting us to be co-hosts on the show tonight. I'm looking forward to the next three shows that we do together, also Dr. Len. In the meantime, I want to bless everyone across this nation and thank the Lord for giving me the opportunity to be with you all tonight. And with that, we'll say good night.